Hi, everyone, and welcome to Remaking Tomorrow, a series of conversations about the future of teaching and learning. I'm Ryan Rydzeski, here with Greg Baer, and we are the co-authors of When You Wonder, You're Learning, Mr. Rogers' Enduring Lessons for Raising Creative, Curious, Caring Kids.
This is a podcast powered by Remake Learning, a network that ignites engaging and relevant learning in support of young people navigating rapid social and technological change.
On today's episode, we're talking with Michelle Culver, founder of The Rhythm Project, a national organization helping young people prioritize meaningful human connection in the age of artificial intelligence. The project elevates actionable AI research, helps young people harness AI's benefits and understand its risks, and activates AI leadership in the public sphere. We are so excited to have her today. Michelle Culver, welcome to Remaking Tomorrow.
Thank you. It's so good to be here.
Michelle, we're glad to have you here. I noticed, because I was poking around on the website for the Rhythm Project, that you have any number of quotations, including one from the historian Yuval Noah Harari. And this quotation reads, "For every dollar and every minute we invest in improving artificial intelligence, it would be wise to invest a dollar and a minute in developing human consciousness." So, Michelle, first of all, what do you think Harari means by developing human consciousness? And why is this quotation on your website?
I love that you began there. Rather than speculate on what he intended, I'll just tell you why it spoke to us so deeply when we read it. When we want to understand what a person or a collective or a society values, you look at time and money, not what we say, but where we actually put our investment. And to me, this is a moment where it's a real values moment for us collectively to decide who do we want to be and then how do we actually want to invest our resources and our energy into that. And so already we see that industry is investing billions of dollars into AI. And that's not inherently good or bad. No technology can be inherently good or bad, but it's not neutral. And in particular, we already see that companion bots, these AI chatbots that work to build an emotional attachment with the user, that's already the fastest growing market. It's estimated at $28 billion already to date. And so when you think about that kind of investment into technology that is changing the way we fundamentally reconnect as humans, it makes us want to go back and say, well, what does it mean to be human? And what about our relationships do we want to uplift and preserve? So for us, it's a call to say, even as we start to move towards this era that's going to be defined by this technology, what are those aspects of humanity that have defined us for millennia that we want to reclaim and uplift alongside this technology? So for us, it looks like singing, it looks like ritual, it looks like investing in the kind of human connections or opportunities to be in nature that have allowed us to grow and heal and learn and grieve and find joy as a society for as long as we've been in existence. We want that alongside AI.
Michelle, the Rhythm Project works to help young people harness AI's benefits and also to understand its risks. And we're going to get into both those benefits and those risks. But let's start here. What is it about AI that young people find so attractive? And what is it helping them do? What is it helping them become?
Well, AI can play a role in young people's lives in many different dimensions. And so in the Rhythm Project, we focus specifically on the intersection between our use of AI and our human relationships, our human connection. So we are already seeing, based on a recent Common Sense Media report, 72% of teens have used AI for relational purposes, and 52% are regular users. And it's actually quite understandable when you get behind their eyes as to why that's the case. And so when we talk to young people, what we find is that, first of all, it's just entertaining. They're curious about the technology. It's fun to go on to Character AI and to talk to characters from your favorite fan fiction and to be in a playful relationship with this. Young people always are first to explore and play with and adapt new emerging technologies. But then more importantly, what we're hearing from youth is that it's giving really helpful advice. And AI is available all the time whenever they need someone to talk to. You know, instead of texting the friend late at night in the middle of the night or trying to get to a teacher or a therapist at times where they're not available, AI is there. And one of the things that they say the most is that it doesn't judge them. So they can say things that they might not tell to their friends or to family and feel as though they're getting advice that has less of an agenda. And that's really important to young people who very naturally in their teen years are trying to think about who they are in the world and how other people perceive and experience them. So that non-judgment is one of the things we hear coming up quite a bit. So when I get into the risks and we start to talk about how this technology has the potential to displace human relationships, it is true that there are some young people who are already seeing this as a strength, as a tool to help them think about how to write the text in a way that's going to be less upsetting to a friend that they care about, or to consider the perspectives of someone that they haven't yet had the opportunity to really understand where they're coming from. I think one of the things that makes me nervous is that we also hear it's sometimes easier than talking to real people.
Well, that nervousness and that caution is something that this dad feels very real, Michelle. So as the dad of two teenagers, some days, maybe most days, I'm a little glasses half empty as I think about AI and emerging technologies. So lay it on me. Tell me about the risks. Tell me all the reasons that, in fact, I should be cautious and worried about what's ahead.
What we do find is that this technology reduces friction. Of course, we all know that friction is important for growth. It's some of those painful moments that we often learn the most from. And what we see is that increasingly young people are turning to AI in a way that we fear could displace those authentic human relationships. Part of the power of these tools is that you can design them so they look how you want, or play the archetype or character of whomever it is that they're excited to be in a relationship with, or they sound how they want to sound. And they are notoriously sycophantic. They tell you how great you are and how meaningful and thoughtful your ideas and how right your ideas are. And so we do really worry that in one possible future, these AI relationships become so seductive that they displace actual authentic human relationship and some of that awkward, painful learning that comes from being in relationship with humans who have their own needs as well.
Michelle, so much of what you said reminds me of, you know, what's often dubbed this nation's loneliness epidemic, something we've covered here before on the podcast with health officials like former Surgeon General Vivek Murthy. When you think about AI and you think about loneliness, I think the connection between the two might not be immediately obvious to a lot of us, but can you help us understand that connection, especially as it relates to young people?
I'm so glad you guys are raising this, because what we're seeing is these two forces that are about to collide, this decline in human connection and the arrival of what we're talking about as the loneliness epidemic, alongside this powerful force with generative AI. And as these two forces are about to collide, something profound is going to unfold, akin to, or maybe arguably even more profound than the arrival of social media 20 years ago. Part of what that suggests is that we still have the opportunity to shape and influence what starts to unfold. And one of the most important insights that I want to take forward from the last 20 years into this AI moment is that young people are not a monolith. So for some young people, they're going to be able to use this tool in powerful ways to strengthen the relationships and networks either that already exist or that they want to have access to and they want to practice and prepare for. For other young people who are, in fact, already experiencing extreme isolation and loneliness, we see that there's some emerging and mixed research on this. One study out of Stanford showed that being in relationship with Replica, one of the AI apps that are out there for companionship, reduced suicidal ideation in 3% of its users. Now, that's early. And yet, one of the things that really worries me is that one of the recent studies from OpenAI and MIT shows that using voice mode, which is the feature on ChatGPT that allows you to be in conversation, and these voices are increasingly lifelike and empathetic and incredibly responsive. And as you use voice mode, it results in more time being spent on ChatGPT per day and less time actually spent socializing with people in real life. And so we do worry that there is the potential where we actually solve loneliness by increasing isolation.
This is Greg Baer, here with Ryan Rudzeski, and we're talking with Michelle Culver, founder of The Rhythm Project.
Michelle, I wouldn't be doing my duty as a former core member if I didn't ask you about also being the founder of Teach for America's Reinvention Lab, which is Teach for America's research and development arm for rethinking education. And when you think about these different career stages, whether it's the Reinvention Lab or the Rhythm Project, can you talk about some of the through lines that tie your work life together?
Well, the Rhythm Project wouldn't exist without the leadership and experience of being at the Reinvention Lab. And in part because the Reinvention Lab is the R&D wing for the future of learning at Teach for America, we were asking big questions about not just how to change the learning environments, but what's going to change in the environment around the learner. So it makes sense to ask ourselves the very important questions about how AI is going to change the way we work and teach and learn. Those were questions that we were working on in the Reinvention Lab. It also became clear to me that we needed to add this question about how is AI going to change the way we relate to each other as humans? One of the things that was most defining about our experience when I was working at the Reinvention Lab was that we had youth leaders into the work that we're doing. And in doing so, those young people not only shaped our priorities and the work that we were building, but they really changed my worldview just by being proximate to them. One of the things I often heard from our youth leaders was how under pressure and anxious they often felt, and how isolated and alone they felt in those feelings. And so in education, we often talk about socio-emotional learning as a means to an academic end. But when you listen to these young people, they're basically saying, I want to feel alive, period. And that matters in its own right. And at the same time, when I was leading at the Reinvention Lab, this was the arrival of generative AI. And so it was because of the opportunity to be at the cutting edge and watch how AI was unfolding and reshaping the way in which we both work and teach and learn, I kept thinking, well, where's the conversation about how AI is going to fundamentally change us as people? And so it was the combination of those two forces, this decline in human connection, hearing it from young people directly, and understanding the power of having them at the table and being able to see the ways in which the field of education both thinks proactively, but often narrowly about those learning outcomes, that I started to hunger for the bigger conversation about human connection and AI. That was what led us to go ahead and host that very first summit, where we were bringing together youth leaders and technologists and mental health professionals and researchers and educators, philanthropists, all together in one room to have the conversation about what is it that young people are going to need to rebuild and evolve human connection in the age of AI.
I love this connection that you've made, Michelle, between your work in founding the Reinvention Lab and your work in creating the Rhythm Project. And that is, as we wrestle with the future of learning, there are people or groups of people that we need to activate. And how we activate them, not just as engaged people, but as leaders themselves. And are there other people, as you think about the AI space, whom you're endeavoring to activate and to be part of this conversation about the future of learning in an AI age?
I so appreciate this question because I think that's one of our biggest Achilles heels in education, is that we are not thinking expansively in a cross-sector way. And so we really seek to bring together a multi-generational, but also cross-class, cross-sector coalition of leaders who are thinking about policy, who are thinking about new schooling models, who are thinking about building new third spaces, who are thinking about the research required to have an evidence base from which to make recommendations in our path forward. And so it really is going to take both the strength of educators' wisdom and expertise in relationships with young people, as well as their parents and all of these different cross-sector leaders to come together to imagine a world that we want and start to understand and benefit from the expertise within each and act our way into that together.
Michelle, we have enjoyed this conversation with you so much, and we're not quite done. We are going to close with a little bit of a lightning round, which Greg and I are going to ask you some rapid questions going back and forth, and you just answer with the first thing that comes to mind. Sound good?
Right. And being the clever people that we are, we turn to AI to generate these questions. Michelle, what's one way that you use AI to improve your own life?
I'll tell you a moment that I just had. It was such an unexpected delight. So I have been playing with an app called Oniri. I think that's how it's pronounced. O-N-I-R-I. It's a dream app. And I used it with my daughter the other night, who woke up in the middle of the night and came in because she'd had a nightmare. And she started to tell me about it. So I grabbed my phone. I said, let's record this together, and then we'll use this tool to see if it offers us any insight. But it's your dream, so you're going to get to figure out if this offers anything. And then as she played it back and it interacted with her by asking a bunch of additional follow-up questions, it unlocked this incredible conversation where I got to surface and discover some real worries that were on my daughter's heart and mind that I did not know about. And had I not had that AI tool, I would have missed that as a resource in getting closer to the person, one of the people who I care most about in my life.
You mentioned earlier ritual and reconnecting to nature. What are your favorite analog way to build connection and community in your life?
Well, I'll talk about my other daughter, because last weekend we celebrated her bat mitzvah in our home. And what was so spectacular about it was that this child, this young woman, really made the service her own. So she selected the prayers, the poems, the stories that she wanted in the service. She led the service. The rabbi supported her in that. And it was just such a cool ritual to help her articulate her values, her beliefs, and then decide what parts of that she wanted to bring forward. And in the spirit of building community, we sat in a small circle in our home while she led us through the service. And it felt like that moment where I kept thinking, oh my gosh, if every young person at this transitional moment in their life could articulate their values and have the community celebrate them in that, we'd be in such a different place as a society.
Michelle, the website for the Rhythm Project features wonderful quotations from writers ranging from H.G. Wells to Audre Lorde. Who is an author who has changed how you look at the world?
Adrienne Marie Brown, who talks a lot about emergent strategy. And I think as we go into this work, so much of what she offers is this belief that what you tend to grows. And what has been so moving to me about opening this conversation is that there are so many people who want to be a part of this conversation. And so often when we talk about AI, it feels like it's outside of us or very scary or the future is predetermined. And yet when you just simply invite folks in, there are so many beautiful insights and assets that people want to bring to bear at this moment. It really makes me feel like if we just to what we long for, we can create a future where technology is an asset and a resource in pursuit of the vision that we actually really want.
And Michelle, before we go, we have just one more question. What's one thing that parents and educators can do today to make tomorrow a more promising place for every learner?
We can open up non-judgmental conversations about AI. One of the things when we interview youth that comes up over and over and over again is that they are telling us they are using AI regularly, and they are explicitly not talking to the adults in their life, their parents and their educators, about it because they can feel us judging them. And who wants to feel judgment and shame when you're curious and or finding value in something? And so I think one of the most important things we can do is to have multi-generational conversations about why this technology is showing up in our lives, what our intentions are, what we actually want out of our learning or our relationships, and then figure out together how to use this as a tool in service of that, and when to make choices to close the app or to step aside or to instead get into a relationship in a different way when the AI is not actually serving us.
Thank you so much to Michelle Culver, founder of the Rhythm Project. Remaking Tomorrow is powered by Remake Learning. Learn more at remakelearning.org.